Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Human Progress and How to Win. This is episode 16, titled Better UX for Crypto, Molecular Programming, The Age of Entanglement, and Sam Altman's Tweet Storm. All right, so I'm going to go with the second one to start here, Molecular Programming, because I just rewatched that. I finished watching it, and it's kind of fresh in my mind. So this is a YouTube video, Suraj Raval, his channel. Yeah, I've talked about him before, and I'm really excited to dig into his work in this new year. He's all about synthetic biology and what this is about. This was an interview, so it was longer and pretty dense. The guest is Dr. Dominic Scalise, and he's at Caltech. I'll try to get a bio from him if I can of the Caltech pager. I don't know if he has a Twitter, but I will try to include his name at least in the description. Dr. Dominic Scalise, and really fascinating stuff. He's a computer programmer turned kind of this new, this DNA molecular computing, they're calling it. And so early on, kind of the intro bio, he explains obviously computer programming is, the bits part of it, in all the languages, Python, JavaScript, all those things. And this molecular programming is sort of like the CRISPR-Cas9, and he even mentions it in the video. So it's electrons and molecules and living cells they're able to program or kind of manipulate, this is kind of the emerging field. It's still very new, and basically. He talks about this is all about getting more people excited about this field and more, we can, a lot of the stuff they talk about is Dominic was a little bit, more, it's ways out, decades out. And that's kind of, I noticed that's the doctor rational scientist in him. Whereas Suraj and, myself are more of the techie, transhumanist kind of, cypherpunk mentality, where we want it, as soon as possible. Like, yes, let's upgrade my intelligence. Let's, give me superhuman powers or whatnot. It was a good discussion. So I think the immediate applications are smarter drugs. I know he mentioned, where it would, things that you can manipulate to kill like the cancerous bad cells, but still maintain the healthy ones and not kill off everything, just stuff like that. So that was interesting. I don't know if I'll play some of it here. I have to be kind of careful. I don't know what I can and can't play. I think I'm allowed to play clips of things, but I have to keep them short. I don't really know of the rule here. I'm not sure. Side note, I need to talk to somebody about that eventually. But one fascinating, because I want to kind of keep it short anyways. So they kind of, I like talking about the far out things, upgrading my intelligence and things like that, and that stuff is coming. It's just a matter of when. But he used a good example of if you have, an old kind of beater car, and you could put it through this molecular computing simulation, and however long it would take, like a week or a month, you would come back out and the old beater car, the molecules could arrange themselves and you could have a brand new 2020 Tesla or something. So that kind of thing, those kinds of applications are it might be really, really far off, but we should work on stuff like this. This is about progress. And we want people working on this stuff and not just like silly apps that don't really do anything. There's too many people in all these fads, and this stuff is amazing. So anyways, yeah, that's one of them. And then I wrote down a couple things, you know, growing a house. You know, yeah, like 3D printing too, along with that. I mean, that's also, you know, not very obviously mainstream yet, but like, you know, there will be come a time where synthetic biology, this molecular computing, you could grow a house from, I don't know how really it's done, but you know, they mentioned an example, an airplane that could repair itself after a crash or something. And like your smartphone that could automatically like update to upgrade, not just update the software system, but upgrade the phone entirely. So kind of like morphing into a new one. So really cool stuff. And then Dominic Scalise also said, like, you know, we're really good at creating worlds in our computers, you know, the bits, you know, but now in these coming years and decades, we want to bring our creations from the computer into the real world. So it's about merging, not only just merging the two, virtual and real, but really bringing the virtual world out into the real world. So that means not just like digital things and they're like AR, not just that, but like literally being able to program life itself, you know? So this is where it's going. This is a fascinating field. So he said, I know it started out as like DNA computing, but now they're kind of changing into, it's called molecular computing. So guys, check this out. And Suraj has a call to action at the end of this, and I'm going to try to do it too. I know it's like hashtag molecular dharma, I think he's still calling it. I'll try to tag that if I can in the description. So look into this field. If you are in biology, if you are studying biology, really think about startups that are doing this. If you're a grad student, any sort of background in this, like look into this stuff, because I have a feeling traditional colleges and where you're at in labs may not be talking about things like this. It is very interesting to me that a lot of these universities are so stuck in their ways that they don't think about commercializing new technologies into startups. But here's where I come in, and I'm saying, you know, think about it though. You know, think about what you can do in the commercial for-profit business startup world, you know? So anyways, all right. I don't want to talk, you know, I got a lot to cover. So I'll just, you know, again, this whole video will be in the description. So just watch it on your own time. But I want to get moving on here. So, okay, let's go to the Venture Stories podcast. The first one I said, better UX for crypto. So I got a lot from the Village Global people. You know, Eric Thornburg, again, his podcast, Venture Stories. There's like four episodes. I mean, he uploads every day. He does a podcast every day, and nine times, you know, out of ten, it's a good one. So I want to talk about the one that's called The State of Crypto with Charlie Noyes, Noyes. It was a good one. He's a good guest. He's a really smart guy. I know he didn't give very concrete answers on a lot of questions. He didn't want to predict a lot of things in the future. It's all a lot of speculation. It was still good to listen to, but that's why I'm not going to talk about this one for very long, other than the fact it was like 8 minutes to go in the episode, and he actually, for once, someone mentioned something about UX UI design, which that's what I'm studying first and foremost. I'm trying to get a job in UX. So, I'll play a little bit of it here. And what it's about is, you know, these emerging technologies, not just crypto things, but AR, VR, certain AI things, blockchain. even, you know, I don't know, quantum computing. So, I mean, all these things are kind of new hardware, new technologies. They're going to need better user experience. The engineers are always kind of on top of it. They're always there. But the problem is this mainstream adoption. You know, he mentions, I know, MetaMask, the crypto wallet for Google Chrome extension. I've had that before. I've had that too, and it was sort of easy to use. But yeah, there's a lot of crypto stuff out there that's like just really confusing, really hard to use. And that's where better UX comes in, because we need a mainstream adoption. Well, people aren't going to adopt if it's too hard to use. So I have it queued up here.
Stuff happening there. What is your request for startups in terms of things, whether it's DeFi or otherwise? Request for projects, request for experimentation.
It should be right here. I just want to make sure, and I'll let it go.
Where are you really excited? You know, a lot of builders in here. Where are you really excited for people to start building?
I think that there's going to be massive. This is obvious, but there's massive UX UI work that needs to get done on. I think things that like people never expected there to need to be. So like we've expected to have to replace MetaMask for a long time. Yep. I don't know. This is like the most popular Ethereum wallet Chrome extension. We've known that we were going to have to replace that for the last 2 years. We've failed to, but we've known. I think the class of applications that are working now, it is really hard to explain to consumers or try and get them to use most of the stuff that's working in crypto, in the sense that like taking out like in Maker like a synthetic credit position.
All right, so he'll just go into a detail about that, but he just said it. I just wanted to give you a preface and then have him say it. So yeah, I mean, anyone out there that are UX UI people like me, this is our opportunity. It's really exciting. Yeah, get into these startups. Get into these crypto startups that, you know, might be the next big one, because they're going to need us. They're going to need us. And the reason why I want to talk about this too is just it always kind of seems like no one's really talking about UX in the grand scheme of tech. You know, it's usually about the founders, founder CEO, the brilliant idea, and the execution of the engineers and the investors. It's like generally all you get, the coverage that people get. But like, no, the UX UI people are really important. And finally, I just heard some validation. So anyways, okay. Moving on to the next episode. So I want to mention real briefly, Neil Hansch and Liz Keene on corporate innovation was the episode prior. Yeah, pretty good. I just want to say the corporate innovation, they're a part of what's called Silicon Foundry, sifoundry.com. And it's kind of looking at the bigger companies. I think Fortune 5000 companies they work with, and just kind of letting them, giving them advice on how to be more nimble and innovate like a fast moving startup. So, because, yeah, I mean, it's super important that we all kind of, you know, even big companies need to be thinking about how to move quicker, how to innovate better, because a lot of times your big companies are slow moving, they're resistant to change, because what they've accomplished is working, and they don't want to change that. But on the other hand, you might get disrupted by a small startup. And look, it's not about winning and losing. We don't want to disrupt and I win, you lose. We don't want it to be a zero-sum game. So I like what they're doing. It's important for, you know, everyone to kind of stay on top of the trends and then what's happening and innovating. So that, it was good. I liked hearing about that, and I'm going to pay attention to them. Sifoundry.com. I will link that. Moving on then to the James Currier and the Network Effects episode, you know, it was good. I just, honestly, I probably should have re-listened to it. There wasn't really a lot of memorable things other than there is still this huge push to disrupt LinkedIn, which is actually really interesting to me. Apparently, like, there's been a lot of people that have been trying to do it for years, ever since they started. So I'm not the only one that's kind of up, you know, LinkedIn. I just don't think that it's a very good product, and most people don't. Especially me right now, I just forked over $60 to them, and it will be every month for the premium. Because, you know, I'm here trying to get a job, and I feel like it's the right thing to do. I feel like I want to do everything that I can to get a job. So I decided to bite the bullet and pay for it. However, I don't know about you guys, but I just don't think it's worth it. I don't care about the business insight articles. I don't think that helps. I really don't think anything that I get for that money helps. Being able to direct message people for free is like, I mean, that's like the biggest takeaway of LinkedIn, the premium. And it's like, well, that's fine and all, but that should be free. You know, any other social network has that definitely for free. You know, that's why a lot of people love Twitter a lot more. And Twitter is more enjoyable. I don't know. I don't want to talk about it too long, but so I don't know. Just think about it though, because I'm now that's in the back of my mind. Like, how would I disrupt LinkedIn professional networking? Because that's important. It's the idea of it is important to me. Like, you know, because the thing is, Twitter is great, but I look up to so many people, and the thing is, they're not talking back to me. If I tweet to them, if I direct message them, the problem is the famous rich people do not really want to talk to a nobody kid. And I think that's a problem, and I really want to do something about it. I don't know what it would be like, but in essence, that's what LinkedIn is it not? It's about, you know, a bunch of young, hungry kids that are trying to get something from rich older people that have been in the game for 10, 20 years. And we're having such a disconnect between helping people out. They don't have time for us, it seems like. And then the only answer I ever get is, well, you got to do something amazing. Do something impressive anyways, it's just interesting. I don't know. I want to move on because time is moving fast. So the best episode and the recent one is Mike Maples on building successful startups and venture funds. So yeah, this one is really, really good. Mike Maples, I've enjoyed him a lot. He's at what is it? I know he's an investor, but I don't know. Floodgate, I think, yes, Floodgate, co-founder, partner, Floodgate. So, there was a tweet that someone really quickly. Okay, so, and he mentioned this a lot. So, Mike Maples on the Venture Stories podcast, there's a quote that somebody tweeted, and it was really good. So this is quoting Mike Maples. So the best founders are living in the future. Since they're seeing the future before other people do, they can notice something that's missing. Then they build what's missing and bring forward the new future to the rest of the world. So I think a lot – this resonates with me. Definitely has a Peter Thiel – Alan Kay vibe to it, especially Alan Kay. I know Alan Kay talked about this a lot, about not predicting the future, but like seeing 30 years out and scaling it back. So you kind of grab what's in the future and take it, scale it back to the present. So, and Thiel is kind of like this too, you know, these secrets. What are these secrets that no one knows about or no one's working on? So Mike Maples thinks about this. He's very similar. Him, Keith Raboy, you know, the Silicon Valley, you know, kind of the most famous ones. So anyways, yeah, the discussion was really good. I highly recommend this one. It just goes kind of back and forth between what good, great founders are, like this quote that said, you know, the state of investing, the state of startups. Tornberg, Eric, did a really good job at this is kind of the first time that I heard him really talk a lot about, you know, his mission. His goal is to, just exponentially increase the amount of founders and startups And how do I, how does he, you know, lower the barrier of entry for founders and startups? How do we make it easier? How do we make it better so that more founders, more, we need just more innovation. And I think about this a lot, and I really have wanted to talk to him. I might tweet at him. I might message him. You know, this is where, you know, kind of this virtual cities, virtual communities come in. So I don't have to necessarily move to San Francisco and pay all that rent, and cost of living is ridiculous, but how can I get people's attention from right where I'm at, you know? And, yeah, so I don't know. I'll think more on this and see what I can come up with. But anyways, there, and then, so a lot of it was about the state of investing. Something that really kind of, you know, I don't know, disappointed me was like, Mike, you know, is an insider and he's been doing investing for years, and Tornberg knows too, but it's you know, these investors kind of kill me. It's just like this big gambling game to them. And I don't mean to like, I'm not getting mad or any, at anybody. I'm here as a critic, and I'm trying to understand it and like how it could be better, you know, because Mike Maples even said, you know, it really is the you know, the Sequoias, the Andreessen Horowitz, Benchmark, all those same big investment firms are just having the best deals and the most returns. Over year in and year out, it is still like the top 3 to 5 investment firms are getting all the deals. So my question is, and it's so funny to me because I subscribe to Crunchbase, and I hear of like a new firm every day I open up that Crunchbase. Some startup somewhere was funded from such and such partners, some such and such firm. And it's like, man, there are just so many firms sitting on all this money, and they're you know, scratching and clawing to just break even. You know, some of them do like, you know, 2 deals every year, or like 3 deals every year, like 1 every 6 months. I mean, I don't quite get it. And getting back to the molecular programming and doing hard work, doing deep work, doing important things. And you know what, Chamath was talking about, you know, about getting the pendulum swung in the other direction of, you know, progress. So what this is like, I want us to make physical important progress, you know, breakthrough progress. And when and so the reason why I bring VCs into this is like, well, you guys are sitting on all this money, and I know every now and then, yes, you are funding something important, but I would say more often than not, I just don't know, your day-to-day just doesn't seem like you're making much progress. I don't know. And I did actually watch a Gary Tan YouTube video. There was the guy interviewed him about a day in the life in the VC. And, you know, I don't doubt it. He says they work really, really hard. And I don't doubt that. You know, he says it's definitely a 9 to 7 job. He even says, Gary Tan, you know, brilliant investor, says that, you know, he works 9 to 5 only because he has 2 little kids. If he said, if not, he'd be working from like 9 to 7 at least, maybe 9 to 9. So, I mean, that's, and it is, I guess it's true, but a lot of it is meeting with founders and teams that you know you're not going to do a deal with. So much time is wasted because all they seem to do is just meet with a bunch of people all day. And you're going to just say no, like 9 times out of 10. So I've been thinking a lot about disrupting VC and how can we make this more efficient and move faster? And I don't like when so many people are sitting on so much money and they're not really doing much with it. I hate to be kind of, calling people out, but I just think we could do better. Anyways, I want to keep moving on. So I just had to get that out there though. So where are we at? We are at, all right. So Sam Altman of Y Combinator, speaking of investors, But he's, I really enjoy anything that he puts out. I really enjoy it. I think for the instance of time, I will, so he had a tweet storm. It's called How to Be Successful at Your Career, Twitter edition. So everyone follow him definitely right now. Sam Altman. He has loads of wisdom. I'm not going to read all of it in the interest of time. I want to read just the ones that I personally liked. So one of them here, it says, spend a lot of time with the kind of people who are constantly producing new ideas. I love that. I'm, you know, here where I'm at in town, I just don't have a lot of people that are like this, and I'm dying to move to a city where I can just talk to people about all this kind of stuff, hash ideas out, and are positive and are always future thinking, forward thinking people. Anyways, moving on to the next few. Authentic high conviction vision is rare and valuable. Double down when you find it or find people who have it. So it kind of reminds me of the James Clear tweet that I tweeted out. You know, when we're in a time where knowledge and information is abundant, but it's filtering through that noise and finding what's important, that's key. It's not, along the lines of that. But anyways, this is kind of the same thing. So authentic high conviction and vision is rare. So it kind of gets you thinking about not just programming whatever, or building a startup for whatever reason, doing it when you really find something, when you really think you are onto something and you found the right thing to build, the right thing to work on at the right time. That is the high conviction vision that he's talking about, you know, because there's a lot of people who can code, a lot of people can design, but they're just not doing anything valuable, you know, but it's filtering through that noise, you know, that high in the intuition, the judgment that Naval talks about too. That's the key. And that's my hobby. That's literally my hobby. I don't really program, but I'm obsessed with like vision and like finding the right thing to work on. It's awesome. Anyways, a couple more here. It's really helpful to get someone to take a bet on you. Hire you, and you know, in parentheses, hire you, promote you, invest in your company or whatever early in your career. The best way to do this is to first do whatever you can to help them. You know, yeah. So I think a lot about this, where I'm at in my phase. I'm just starting out in tech, not a designer yet, but I'm a big fan of him, like Tornberg, Adam Draper, a number of people. And honestly, yeah, that's what you want to do. You want to find a way to help them first. Don't ask for a job. Don't ask for advice, like investment, whatever. Figure out a way to help them. I think first it's important to like let them know that you're a fan of their work. Like I have of Adam and Eric, and they've liked my tweets and stuff. So do that. Let them know that you like them, that you're a fan or whatever, and then figure out a way to help them. Just kind of, you know, yeah, throw things at them, spitball at them. And that's kind of your way in. So I really like that one. Okay, the next one, the final one I have. The most value comes from doing something no one else can do or no one else has thought of in a way that is hard for other people to copy. If you try to be just like everyone else and do just what they're doing, you will maybe do okay, but certainly not great. So again, yes, this comes from Peter Thiel and Mike Maples, you know, Keith Raboy. It's finding that secret, the billion-dollar secret, thinking of something no one else has thought of, no one else has worked on, becoming that monopoly. So, man, really, really great. There's a number of them. Okay. And then the last one here. It says, if you want to get rich, remember that the way to do it is via equity, not salary. Love this because I struggle with this. I don't know sometimes, like, what is the best way? Is it investing in companies? And that's something Tornberg and Mike Maples talked about is, do we want the average people investing in companies? I mean, I've tried, but I'm just, yeah, I think Mike may